His underdeveloped transhuman body was shutting down in response to the pain. He tried to call out, his tongue feeling thick in his mouth.
"Teb! Tebakai! Brother!"
In the void beneath him, something stirred. A presence. An intelligence of sorts. It was ancient and cold and incomprehensibly alien. A wave of disorienting nausea passed over him. Not fear. No, nothing like that. They shall know no fear. It was something else. Obadiah felt himself being regarded in the way that a Sotan Fantine might regard a fire ant, or a man might regard an amoeba. Otherworldly voices whispered to him in languages he did not understand.
"No, no fear. No, no fear. No, no fear."
Gritting his teeth against the agonizing pain in his shoulders, he forced himself around in the harness. He managed to turn his head just enough to glimpse that ancient, cold, alien presence.
And he screamed.
He saw the truth at the heart of the Pharos, and he saw what was coming to Sota. And it saw him. Tebakai sagged. His eyes moved to each of the three legionary centurions in turn, anxious for their approval, though he did not allow his gaze to remain long on the other figures beyond the communication field.
"That's everything, my lords. That was when we brought him up and gave him over to Apothecary Taricus. I don't know what it was that happened to him down there, but he was barely conscious."
Tebakai wrung his fingers plaintively.
"He was saying things. Strange things."
From the other side of Ultramar, the voice of a Primarch reached Mount Pharos.
"What was it, Neophyte? What did young Obadiah say?"
Tebakai's face twisted. He trembled before the quiet, assured power of that voice.
"My lord, I cannot tell a lie. He kept crying out, 'They see our light,' over and over again. Sergeant Arcus asked him who, but we couldn't make him tell us."
Warsmith Dantioch ambled over to him, his power-armored joints wheezing, and he placed his gauntleted hands upon the youth's shoulders.
"Just as Arcus said in the report. You've done well here today, Neophyte Tebakai. You are a credit to your company and your legion."
Captain Adullus managed to catch Dantioch's eye. The warsmith glared back at him through the sockets of his iron skull mask, but Adullus would not be made to look weak before the Primarch.
"That is open to some debate, warsmith," he said. "Tebakai and the rest of the cohort will be—"
"There's something more,"
the neophyte blurted out, interrupting his captain.
"Something that can't be in the report."
Adullus froze.
"What?"
"Obadiah whispered something to me, and Sergeant Arcus didn't know about it. I'll never forget what he said, though. I'm sure of that. No one could forget it."
Even Dantioch was taken aback.
"Tell us, lad."
Tebakai narrowed his eyes.
He said that they are out there now, in the dark between the stars. And again he said that they see our light."
No one spoke. Even the machinery tended by Captain Pollock seemed to hush its mechanical chatter. From his throne on distant Macragge, it was Lionel Johnson himself, Primarch of the First Legion, that broke the silence.
"And what do you think that means, Tebakai?"
The neophyte shuffled awkwardly.
"Forgive me, lord, but I know you met my brother before, when you were here on Sota. He talked about it a lot. It was him who saw the coming of Emperor Sanguinius in his dreams. So maybe this was a new vision, something bad."
Dantioch moved back to his own chair, but did not sit.
"And we have yet to fully explore the various incidental empathic projection phenomena associated with the Pharos, though the locals seem to accept it well enough. They call it mountain dreaming."
"Indeed," The lion nodded. I heard Obadiah's original prophecy with my own ears.
The Dulles stood tall.
You will send more legionary forces to us as a precaution, then, my lord. We can accommodate another company on the orbital platform, and any number of ships at defensible anchorage points within the system, and that's before we even land anything onto the planet itself.
The Primarch fixed him with an intense gaze.
We will not be landing anything on Sota, Captain, he said flatly. Because I am not sending any more legionary forces to you.
Dantioch twitched. Adulis made to reply, but thought better of it. The lion went on.
There is a whole company of ultramarines guarding the system, plus the orbital platform itself, and a constant rotation of ships from at least three legions. We have been over this before. Thanks to Captain Pollux, and my previous decision still stands. I will not draw attention to Sota by blockading it with my fleet.
He nodded to Dantioch again.
Never mind the Aegida Company. The greatest shield you have there, Warsmith, is the appearance of being completely and utterly insignificant. As unsettling as Obadiah's feverish words might have been for his neophyte brethren, I hear nothing like the certainty in them that I did the first time. This was not a prophecy. It was just a bad dream.
Dantioch bowed, the movement causing him some noticeable discomfort.
Of course. I shall defer to your tactical wisdom, Lord Johnson. If you are satisfied that Sota and the Pharos remain safe, then that is
indeed, that is all, said the lion,
leaning back into his seat.
Captain Adalus, you are to inform Sergeant Arcus and his scout cohort, including Tebekai and Obadiah, when he can be roused from the Apothecarium, that I would commune with them again directly. In the meantime, all of these matters here discussed are to be considered of the utmost secrecy. Let none speak of them, or face my wrath.
My lord, said Adalus, relieved in no small measure that the audience was finally coming to a close. It shall be done. With a gloaming sigh, the communication field faded, leaving the Convincus Cubicularum in a cold, pensive silence. The lion remained seated, gazing into the now empty air, one finger tapping absently upon the arm of the throne. Holguin, voted lieutenant of the Deathwing, waited as long as was seemly before stepping forwards to relight the chamber's lamps.
"Leave them," the Primarch murmured.
"My lord?" "We shall not remain here. The hour is late, and I suspect we have already drawn the attention of my brother's guardians in this unscheduled contact with Sota."
"As you wish. What will you tell Lord Gilliman of these events, or the Emperor Sanguinis?"
"I have no intention of telling either of them anything."
Holguin shifted uneasily.
"But the neophytes—"
The Primarch shrugged, dismissing the lieutenant's concern with a flick of his hand.
"There is nothing to tell. I did not hear evidence of any credible threat to the 13th Legion operation on Sota, far less the security of the palace here. Like as not, the whole story is just fanciful suggestion, amplified in the minds of those boys by that damned mountain. I cannot explain any of what they claim to have witnessed, but equally I cannot see that it gives me any cause to investigate further."
He rose, holding out his bare hands to the Deathwing warriors standing nearby. They brought him his gauntlets, his weapon belts and war helm. As he fastened the clasps at his wrists, Holguin also stepped forwards, bearing the mighty lion sword, and the Primarch gave him a knowing look.
"Besides, when have you ever known me to offer anyone the whole truth unasked for? I will not lie, but I will not play Rabuti's game of Imperium Secundus with an open hand."
Holguin handed him the blade.
"I see the wisdom in it. A truth unspoken is the coin of tomorrow, is it not?"
"Just so," the Primarch said. "Regardless, we have far more pressing matters to attend to."
"The hunt continues as planned, then. You intend to keep searching for the Night Haunter in secret? A tremor flickered beneath the lion's right eye at the mention of the name, and he gripped the hilt of the sheathed sword tightly.
The hunt will never end, he growled. Not until I have him, Holguin. Broken, or in chains, begging for his miserable, worthless life.
He tilted his head, cricking the tension from his neck.
And then I'll gut him.
While that would be a righteous and justified act, I feel honour-bound to remind you that Gilliman appointed you Lord Protector, not Chief Executioner.
The lion's glare turned icy.
Have a care, little brother. Those who question my judgment soon wish they hadn't. Conrad Kurz is an evil from which the entire galaxy needs protecting. He has no place in a sane, ordered universe. Would you not agree with that, at least, my voted lieutenant?
Holguin bowed his head.
Of course, my liege. The other legions are more than a match for the traitor warband still scattered throughout Ultramar. The Deathwing stands ready to serve you, and you alone.
Then send word to the fleet, triple encryption. We leave before dawn. The flagship and her attendant flotillas will remain on station over Macragge as a show of force. All other shipmasters and legionary captains are to expect new orders within the hour.
The Primarch took up his helm in the crook of his arm, and they strode side by side towards the grand doors of the chamber, the lion letting his cloak sweep behind him as he went. Holguin held out a finely wrought bolt pistol, pressing the grip into the Primarch's waiting hand.
"And our destination, Lord?" he asked. "Where are we to resume the hunt for Kurz?"
The lion smiled grimly to himself as the doors were thrown wide.
"Wherever he is, he's not on Sota. Of that much, at least, we can be certain."
That was The Heart of the Pharos by L.J. Goulding, read by Jonathan Keeley.
Wolf King by Chris Raitt, read by Jonathan Keeble.
The Bloodwell. The Sixth Legion, known as the Space Wolves by those who had come to fear them, and as the dogs of the Emperor by those fallen into treachery, were in truth no masters of the void. Not like the Khan's wild riders, nor the lion's tactical magisters, nor, it had to be said, like the analytical coldbloods of the 20th Legion, who approached the matter of three-dimensional war as they did all else, with precision, forethought, and subtlety. For the warriors of the rout, raised on a world of shifting ice floes, a ship was a tool, a means for staving off the fury of the slate-grey oceans, for just long enough to find firm terrain underfoot. They engraved the heads of dragons into their ship's prows, and wound runes of warding into their long hulls. But they never loved them. Not like they loved the axes that could be wielded with freedom on the scarce land. They had taken these ancient ways into the Sea of Stars with them, and their battleships and cruisers and frigates and gunships fulfilled the same purpose, to deliver them to the field of battle with all swiftness, from where their true strengths, the charge, the fury, the application of unfettered aggression, could be applied in the manner that sated their ever-ravening war spirit. So if the tales be told rightly, the wolves had never loved the abyss, and so their great warships had been furnished like the continent-firm halls of ancient kings, burning with braziers and acrid with the stench of hot iron. For the rout, the deep dark was no place to conduct war, for in that place a warrior could not see his enemy,
He could not gaze into his eyes as they locked blades, nor feel his fear, nor taste the blood of him on his lips. For such a killer, the vacuum was a mere after-image of hell, a place without true valour, a lacuna, in which nothing but intellect governed the prosecution of battle.
"These things must change,"
Bjorn the One-Handed thought, as he ran through the narrow corridors of the enemy starship, his new lightning claw crackling with disruptor charge.
"We must become all things to all wars."
His pack ran with him, their shoulders and heads low, panting through bloody vox grills. Godsmote was tight on his shoulder, the Huskarl to his chief. Only four remained of the seven wolves who had boarded the Alpha Legion frigate Iota Malephilus. But still they ground their brutal way towards their target, cutting hard, breaking armour and the bones within it. They had felled the champion, the monster in tactical dreadnought plate that had slaughtered their pack brothers. And since then Bjorn had led them further up, like a burning brand thrust towards the ship's beating heart. Every sinew flared with hot life. The stink of copper filled his helm's intake. Fast, fast, and faster they went. They ran together, armour clanging against one another in the tight spaces, moving like a single hunter. They were close now. The bridge beckoned less than five levels up. Bjorn could smell the enemy's anxiety ramping up the closer they got. They couldn't deal with this speed, this ferocity, and it made him want to roar with pleasure. After so long cramped up in the coffins of iron, playing the game that they hated against foes they could not see, they were fighting again, just as the fates had built them to. "The Wolf King will revel in this," the One-Handed thought, as the next bulkhead raced towards them, guarded by men who would soon be dead. "And this will stir his soul. He will growl again like he used to." He felt his fangs scrape along the inside of his breathy helm, and he wished he could twist the armour off and breathe the toxic air of the dying ship while laughing at its murder. Perhaps Lord Gunn had been right. Perhaps this was the way. Take the battle into the enemy's face, crack his ribs and tear out his throat. The siege could be broken. Bjorn and his pack brothers were like a throwing axe, launched end over end, too fast and too heavy to stop. He could live with the Jarl, who gave him the evil mark whenever he laid amber eyes on him, being right. He could live with anything if it broke the shackles that had gripped them in the Alaxis blood well for so long. He glanced at the chrono mark on his helm display. They were well into the second hour of the action, and that made his heart rates surge.
"We need to get out of here," thought Bjorn,
crashing into the bulkhead defences and lashing out with the claw that he had already learned to love so fiercely.
"We need to get out!"
Chapter 1 Three standard days previously, inside the Alaxis Nebula, called the Bloodwell, the Eye of Acid, the wolves had met in war council. The Legion had been driven into the cluster by extremity, and only its extraordinary stellar violence had kept them alive to fight on. The gas cloud was vast, a skein of rust-red on the face of the void, falling into deeper and more intensive virulence the further one went in. Sensors were blinded, engine systems crippled, and the Geller fields fizzed like magnesium on water. No sane navigator would have taken a ship into those depths, save but for the certain promise of annihilation on the outside. There were tunnels within, mere pockets of clear space between the great blooms of corrosive matter. The ships of the fleet could slip down them, guarded and menaced by the lethal shoals on every flank, hidden from enemy scan sweeps and torpedo rakes, but open to devastating flares that punched through armour plate and overloaded void shields. As they pushed into the bowels of the Bloodwell, the wolves found that the capillaries grew narrower, more fouled, less open, tangled like nerve fronds. A ship, dragged into the burning gas fields, would be consumed in hours, its hull melting as its shield carapace imploded and its warp core breached. So the wolves ran warily, sending escorts out wide and running repeated auger soundings. No starlight illuminated those depths, and space itself glowed with the red anger of a clotted wound. The ice-grey prows of the Vilka Fenrika ships were as bloody as wolf maws. Every warship carried scars from the brutal battle with the Alpha Legion out in the open void. They had been ambushed while still recovering from post-Prospero operations, outnumbered and outmaneuvered, and only retreating into the heart of the cloud had kept them alive to fight again. Many of their ships were now incapable of making for the warp, even if the gas tides had allowed. Tech crews crawled over every surface of every battleship, working punishing rotations just to get shield generators functioning and macro cannon arrays back online. But they would never complete that task adequately, not without the attentions of Mechanicum-sanctioned shipyards, and the closest of those was unimaginably far away. So the wolves were cornered, wounded and lean with hunger, forced into retreat by an enemy with greater resources and infinite patience. They were harried at every turn, driven onward like cattle before the whip, until the madness of confinement ran like a virus through the decks. That was the environment in which Gunnar Gunhilt, the Jarl of Ulm, called Lord Gunn by his brothers, and second only to the Primarch, made his case.
"They will run us down," he said.
The Legion Command, a council of 40 souls, listened intently. Russ himself had not spoken. The Primarch was slouched in a granite throne, his true wolves curled at his boots, his ruddy face locked in brooding. Frost-blue eyes glittered dully under a mane of dirty blonde hair. The Lord of Winter and War had not fought since the abortive attempt to summon Alpharius to the Hrafnical, and the enforced lethargy seemed to have atrophied him. Bjorn had witnessed that last fight, had seen his Primarch take apart a Contemptor dreadnought as if it were a child's toy. That power must still have been there, coiled deep, locked in his brawler's hearts, even in the midst of endless defeat. But the surface fire had gone. Russ now surrounded himself with runes, listening to the cold whispers of white-haired priests and trying to divine the auguries like a Goti of old. It was whispered, and Bjorn had heard the whispers, that the Wolf King had lost his stomach for the fight. They said that being kept out of the greater war had turned his mind, that the death of Magnus haunted him, and that he had not slept a clear night since the Khan had refused to come to his aid. Bjorn did not believe that, and knew the whispers were foolish. But something, it had to be admitted, had changed. Lord Gunn knew it. Helmschrott knew it, as did the priests and the ship commanders and the jarls of the Legion.
"They believe us beaten," Gunn said. "That makes them unwary. We strike back hard. The fleet together, launching boarding actions to take out the lead battleships."
There were grunts of agreement around the ceremonial circle, lit only by the swaying light of half-cold fires. Above them all, looming in the dark, were totems from the origin world, animal skulls, knot-handled axes, wide-eyed masks of gods and monsters, still bearing the marks of long-gone Fenrisian wind and rain.
"If we keep running, we will deserve to die here, skinnier starving dogs."
Russ said nothing, but his fingers moved through the thick fur of the wolves at his feet. He stared into the heart of the circle at the annulus stone, brought from Asaheim, like all the other Sarsons in that massive ship. Circles had been carved on its surface, concentric and spiralling, worn smooth by eons, predating the Great Crusade by 1,000 years.
"Gunn speaks true," said
Ogvai, adding to the counsel he had given before. All the jarls were united in this. They were tired of running. Russ looked up then, but not at Lord Gunn, or Ogvai Helmschrott, or any of the others. He looked, as he so often did, straight at Bjorn. As he did so, Bjorn sensed the spark of resentment from the elder warriors, even Ogvai, the master of his own great company, and he felt the old mix of shame and pride that Russ's attention gave him. No one knew why the Primarch favoured him so much. For some, it was further evidence of the softening of his once peerless battle-cunning. The rune-rattlers and bone-carvers kept their own counsel, and Bjorn himself had never wanted to know the reasons, not least for fear of what Russ might have seen. In the event, the Primarch said nothing to him. His gaze wandered away again, and one of the two wolves at his feet whined uneasily.
"This will be your fight, gun," Russ said at last. "Hit them hard or not at all. They have the numbers on us."
Lord Gunn did not grin at that, not like he might have done in the past.
"It will be done."
"You have 2 hours once we start," said Russ distractedly. "No more. We break out in that time or I'm calling you back."
2 hours,
started Gunn.
"No more," snarled Russ, his eyes briefly flashing. "They outnumber us. They outgun us. We break the cordon and push free of it, or we fall back. I will not have my fleet crippled on their anvil."
He slumped back into torpor. He had not said whether he would try to hunt down Alpharius again, or leave the blade work to his warriors. He said so little. Slowly Lord Gunn bowed his head. He had been given his chance, but the margin for success was slender.
"As you will it,"
was all he said. His fists balled on the stone before him as if he wanted to break it open. They tracked the Alpha Legion on long-range augurs for the next 2 standard days, gaining as complete a picture of the enemy formation as they could. Lord Gunn's war council estimated that 2/3 of Alpharius's fleet had followed them into the gas cloud's heart, arranged in as loose a formation as the treacherous ingress routes would allow. The rest had remained further back, hanging above the entire sprawling structure to ward against the space wolves escaping. Precise numbers were hard to gauge, even across the wolves' own ravaged fleet. Comms malfunctions led to many smaller ships being misclassified as lost when they were still within sensor range. What was clear was that the Alpha Legion resources were far in excess of what Gunn had at his disposal, and their capital ships were in better shape too. Hrafnical, the fleet's lone Gloriana-class behemoth, had taken a beating during the escape into the nebula, and would only offer ranged support to the breakout attempt. That left the line battleships, Ragnarok, Nidhoggur, Fenrisava, and Rusfangum, to carry the main assault, even though the Fenrisava was in only marginally better battle condition than the flagship. The Alaxis Gulf presented tactical challenges. There was no space to spread out into the void, or to make elaborate manoeuvres. They would be fighting in the largest of the gas tunnels, hemmed in on all sides by the shifting curtains of foaming crimson. The aperture's diameter at the narrowest point was less than 200 kilometres, a claustrophobic space to be marshalling a battle group in, and one that gave almost no room for proper movement. Given those constraints, Lord Gunn had opted for the one thing his legion could always be relied upon to excel at. Full frontal assault, conducted at speed and with full commitment. The core attack from the capital ships would be supported by 2 wings of strike cruisers, each one aiming to power ahead on either flank to hem in the lead Alpha Legion vessels and keep their lateral gun hulls busy. As soon as battle was joined, Gunn would give the order for massed boarding torpedoes and gunship assaults. The earlier encounter in the deep void had driven home the lesson that the wolves' only real advantage lay in hand-to-hand combat, despite the self-evident risks of losing warriors to a more numerous enemy. Lord Gunn's aim was, so he told his brothers,
"to ram our blades into their throats, twisting them so deep their eyes will burst."
No one disagreed. The councils were concluded. Swords were sharpened, armour was sanctified with runic wards, and battle rites were completed. Being hunted didn't suit the wolves, and the chance to turn the tables sat well with the legion's bruised soul. Late on the 2nd day, as the chronometer had it, the fleet was put on high alert. The trajectories had already been calculated, responding to expected Alpha Legion movements. The pursuing fleet was allowed to close in through a gradual slowing of the main plasma thrusters, made to look consistent with steadily leaking containment shells. Throughout all of this, Russ remained only part-engaged. He spent increasing amounts of time in his own private chambers. Petitions went unanswered. Soon it became apparent that he'd meant what he'd said. This was Lord Gunn's attack. As the fleet chronometer clicked into the nominal nocturnal phase, trigger signals were distributed throughout the Wolf's rearguard, alerting them to the imminent movement of the battleship core. The trailing escort vessel Vrek reported augmented real-view sightings of Alpha Legion outriders at a range of 900 kilometers, and those readings were fed into the prepared attack pattern cogitators. 6 minutes later, the order for full about was given, and the bulk of the rearguard executed a lazy turn. The slowness of the manoeuvre served two purposes. To allow time for the lumbering battleships to bring their forward lances to bear, and to delay alerting the enemy that a major reconfiguration was underway until the last moment. 9 minutes after that, attack vectors were transmitted to all line vessels, battleships, cruisers, frigates, destroyers. Boarding parties were given their target locations and sealed in launch tubes. As if in anticipation of what was to come, the gas clouds on all sides throbbed violently, sending arcs of glowing matter lashing across the face of the cloying depths. 2 minutes later, the lead Alpha Legion vessels entered true visual range. They were already formed up into defensive positions, spaced evenly across the width of the gas tunnel to prevent a sortie slipping through. The closest signals were those of strafe attack destroyers, all now bearing the scaled sapphire livery of the 20th Legion. Behind those came the bigger vessels, the real targets, Dominus and Vengeance-class warships, bearing the Hydra mark upon their axe-blade prows. Lord Gunn, standing fully armoured on Ragnarok's throne dais, took in the final assessments of the enemy formations. His amber eyes glittered under grey-black brows, scrutinising the void as if he would twist it apart with his fingers. On the ranked levels below, warriors of the rout looked up at him, waiting. They all knew that the last time they had attempted to engage the Alpha Legion head-on, they had danced with destruction, and now every expression was tight with the need for vengeance, to prove themselves, to do better.
"Ye are the wolves of Fenris," thought Gunn,
drawing strength from their devotion.
"We are the executioners, the savage guardians."
He gripped the iron rails, leaning out over Ragnarok's cavernous bridge chamber.
"Begin,"
he ordered. And with a void silent glare of superheated promethium, the massed ranks of the rout's battle fleet lit engines, activated weapon banks, and powered up to attack speed. First, flanking wings of strike cruisers leapt down the edges of the tunnel, overburning their engines in an attempt to hit faster than the Alpha Legion could respond. Ragnarok took the central dominant position, covered on all sides by four wings of escorts. Nidhoggur and Fenrisava formed up in a loose triangle position on the battle plane, angling to widen the leading fire aperture to its widest point. The gap between the fleets closed. The Alpha Legion formations remained static, each vessel locked tightly to the next by the range of their main macro-cannon batteries. They made no attempt to match the Wolves' attack speed, but kept up a steady velocity, holding together in the classic lattice formation. In void war, structure was everything. In the open void, a fleet's defence hung entirely on its overlapping formation. Every warship of the Legionis Astartes was ferociously, almost comically overarmed, built to subdue the galactic empires of Xenos. Each was the equal of an entire world's subwarp defences, capable of dishing out phenomenal rounds of atmosphere-shredding punishment from long range. Putting such vessels into geometric patterns in which every single ship guarded the flanks of another produced an exponential multiplier effect, and thus crusade war fleets slid through the void like glittering predator packs, giving an enemy no unwatched facets and no open sectors. To break a settled Imperial fleet formation was a daunting task, and every shipmaster in every battle group knew the importance of maintaining the armour of numbers. But this was not the open void. The Alaxes tunnels prevented the most flamboyant outflanking figures, and so what was left was a test of speed and close-range manoeuvring, something that the Sixth believed gave them the advantage. Though they couldn't match the 20th Legion's patient accumulation of territorial advantage, they could outdo them in daring. So the Space Wolves' outriders hurtled into contact with a kind of feral abandon, rolling away from incoming flak battery fire, their lances burning like stars. The Alpha Legion vanguard fell back, maintaining their interlocked position, soaking up the first assaults. It took only seconds for the capital ships to engage. Making use of the narrow channels cleared by the strike cruiser's runs, Ragnarok launched a massed salvo of torpedoes, backed up by lance fire from its escorts and tightly packed broadsides from its own macro cannons. That hurt the Alpha Legion ships. The volume of impacts, launched all at once, smashed frontal void coverage and sheared adamantium buttresses. Gunn had ordered every commander to run primary weapons grids at overcapacity, running the risk of system overload, but giving a savage punch to the opening exchanges. Two hurtling Wolves destroyers were lost in catastrophic explosions as their power containment systems failed, but the resulting maelstrom compensated for their loss. Half a dozen Alpha Legion ships were crippled or destroyed in the blaze, including a Dominus-class monster with the ident Gamma Mu. That, though, was not the primary purpose of the attack. Hangar doors on every warship hissed open, bleeding oxygen into the void in plumes. Waves of boarding torpedoes burst from the delivery tubes, clustering and twisting before locking on to strike coordinates. Secondary wings of gunships launched, while the motherships were still at attack speed, shooting off on pre-planned assault vectors as the lateral batteries opened up behind them. Lord Gunn had made his move, committing the fleet to close-range assault, and it lit the gas tunnel walls with sunbursts of thruster backwash. Powering towards the hulking monsters ahead, the salvos of tiny assault craft screamed towards their targets, taking the slender hopes of their legion with them. Bjorn's pack launched from the fast-attack frigate Icebitten during the first few seconds of the assault. The boarding torpedo tore into the battlesphere alongside the others, wheeling and diving through exploding plasma bursts as the cogitators ran the trillions of calculations needed to deliver them to their target. Locked down in his restraint harness, Bjorn saw the incoming ship ident flash up on his helm display a split second before they hit it. Iota Malephilos. It didn't mean anything to him then. It was just another one of the swarm of escort craft that the boarding parties were aiming to take down, freeing the capital ships to open up with their main gun lines. With a sickening crack, the torpedo crashed into the vessel's hull, and Bjorn's world dissolved into a juddering chaos of white noise and follow-up impacts. The torpedo's prow smashed deep through layers of armoured decking, screeching like a banshee before grinding to a halt amid molten tangles of burning steel. Melters fired, clamps blew, and the bow doors slammed open. The thunder of driver engines, amplified by the close-pressed walls, gave way to the howl of escaping atmosphere. Bjorn ripped his restraints free, unhooked his bolter, and charged out of the flaming aperture. His pack, Hivan, Ferith, Angvar, Ironvald, Earth, and Godsmote, fell in close behind, their helm lenses shimmering crimson in the whirl of lambent shadows. Bjorn no longer carried Bloodbringer, the power axe he'd borne during the previous action, but now wielded a master-crafted lightning claw at the end of his left arm and bolter in his right gauntlet. The fighting was heavy, first against well-armed ship menials, then against the real targets, Alpha Legionnaires. The traitors emerged from the flickering shadows, their scale-pattern armour dark under failing lumen strips. The pack wiped out the three of them, overwhelming in both numbers and speed. They stayed tight after that, sweeping down narrow feeder corridors with the blood still hot on their blades. More mortals were slain as the pack zeroed in on the objective, all members acting in concert, driven to a greater pitch of savagery by the burning need for vengeance. The sternest test came just before the command bridge. An Alpha Legion champion in Terminator plate, backed up by a dozen more Space Marines and mortal auxiliaries, blocking further access amid the crisscross ironwork of barricades. The Legionnaire came straight towards them, chain blades revving under blazing combi bolters. Hivan was blasted out of contention and thrown against the deck in a hail of shells. Godsmote ducked down below the volleys, his chainsword lashed out to bite, but was kicked away and crunched into a bulkhead. Earth and Ironwald slammed themselves back against the corridor's walls, launching ranged fire at the enemy. The champion never spoke. There were no vox-amplified roars of aggression, just silent, efficient murder-dealing. Ferith was downed next, unable to evade the sweeping paths of bolts, his armour shattered into a network of blood-edged cracks. Angvar charged, and was crushed against the far wall with a mighty swipe of the Terminator's right arm. Roaring death curses from the old ice, Bjorn leapt out at the enemy. His four adamantium talons snarled into energy-shrouded life, harsh blue against the gloom around him. The champion came at him hard, chain blades juddering in a bloody shriek. The two warriors crashed together, and Bjorn felt the raking pain of adamantium teeth cutting into his pauldron. He took a bolt round close to the chest, nearly hurling him onto his back. He veered, swerved, and thrust, twisting to keep his foe close. He thrust his claw upward, catching the legionary beneath the helm. Lesser talons would have cracked and splayed, breaking on the reinforced gorget collar and opening Bjorn up to the killing blow. But these talons bit true. The disruptor shroud blazed in a riot of blue-white, tearing into the thick ceramite. The claws pushed deeper, slicking through flesh and carving up sinew, muscle and bone. Hot blood fountained along the adamantium claw lengths, fizzing as it boiled away on the edges. The champion staggered, pinned at the neck. Bjorn twisted the blades and the enemy fell, his throat torn out, thudding to the deck with the heavy final crash of dead battle plate. Bjorn howled his triumph, flinging his claws wide and spraying blood flecks across the corridor. In his wake came his three surviving brothers, firing freely, locking down the surviving Alpha Legionnaires and driving them back. Godsmote, Bjorn's second, chuckled something as he ran past, but Bjorn paid no attention. "Slay them!" he roared. "Slay them all!" His body pumped with hyper-adrenaline as they rampaged onwards. He knew they'd been lucky. Surely not many enemy ships would carry so few legionnaires, but the ecstasy of combat washed away doubt. The remaining levels blurred past in a whirl of slaughter, and soon the blast doors to the command bridge loomed. Bjorn, Ironwald, and Earth crouched down at the head of the leading corridor, training their bolters on the doors, while Godsmote sprinted up, laid breacher charges, and raced back. The detonation blew the corridor walls apart. Bjorn powered up through the flying debris, firing instinctively through the percussive explosions. His pack brothers remained close on his heels, and the four of them crashed through the disintegrating lintel and into the chamber beyond. The bridge was circular, with the command throne in the centre, and terraces and servitor pits arranged concentrically. The crew had plenty of warning, and a hail of lasfire and solid projectiles zinged towards them out of the drifting smoke. Bjorn vaulted over a sensorium pillar and crunched into a 3-metre-wide pit full of mortals. He sliced his way through them, punching his crackling claw into armour shells and the soft flesh beneath. Having cut his way down the length of the pit, he boosted clear at the far end and swung around for the next target. By then, Godsmote and Ironwald had driven a bloody swathe through the open centre. Earth's bolter fire had downed snipers clustered in the high galleries, and he was now working his way along the terraced stations, ripping menials from their places and flinging them to the deck below. Bjorn strode to the ship's commander, a mortal in Alpha Legion colours still occupying the tactical throne, his face white with fear. The commander tried to raise his pistol to his forehead, but Bjorn grabbed it, hurled it aside, and seized him by the throat, lifting him bodily from his seat. The man's veins bulged, and his fingers scraped frantically along Bjorn's gauntlet. There had been a time when Bjorn might have demanded information for something that might unlock the Alpha Legion's mysterious strategy. But no longer. Too many Pack Brothers had died, and his hatred was pure.
"This we will do," Bjorn hissed, "to you all."
He broke the man's neck, taking his time to squeeze the life out of him, before casting the corpse down and crushing the skull beneath his boot. Then he raised his claw overhead, threw his bloody head back, and howled again. The rest of his pack paused in their killing, and did the same, and the entire bridge of the Iota Malephilos, gore-streaked, broken, strewn with the slain, echoed to the millennia-old war cries of unpitying Fenris. The two fleets grappled truly, then, locked in close-range combat across the whole width of the cloud tunnel. Ranks of boarding torpedoes hit their targets or were gunned down, leading to a rolling cascade of brilliant explosions along the leading flanks of the Alpha Legion's protective cordon. The only response from the ranks of Sapphire was a steadily more concentrated pattern of counter-lasfire, scything through the twisting mass of battleships to strike at the capital vessels beyond. No Alpha Legion ship launched its own boarding parties, preferring to hit hard at a distance. The inner core of heavy battleships drew together slowly, buffered by burning rings of escorts. Lord Gunn watched the carnage unfold from Ragnarok's bridge, searching for signs that the high-risk tactic had paid off. A whole swathe of frigate-class Alpha Legion vessels had been disabled during the initial assault, and was now drifting away from the battleplane, their hulls riven with explosions. Slate-grey gunships plied a devastating trade among the remains, swooping close to rake them with strafing fire from battle cannons and heavy bolter mounts. Combined with the hammer-strike volleys from Harafnikel's long-range artillery, the Wolves' assault had left the Alpha Legion's outer fleet badly dented. Still, the enemy remained static. They made no attempt to protect their outer ranks, and let the first wave of frigates burn. Dominus-class warships drove up the centre, wreathed in flame along their massive sides, bolstered by fresh fire support drawn from the rear of the Alpha Legion formation. Soon, the volume of lance strikes reached critical levels, sizzling through the void as if the beams could set it alight. With no room for flanking moves, the Wolves' vessels began to turn clumsily, launching broadsides from their ventral batteries in an attempt to match firepower levels. All across Ragnarok's bridge, tactical reports flooded in, attended to by sprinting menials and relayed to the Legion's command points. Several boarding parties had closed in on their prey's bridges. Three light warships had already been taken, another six were contested, and two more had been destroyed from within. Slowly, Gunn began to realize the truth. The Alpha Legion commander, whoever he was happy to let his lesser ships die. The frigates were undermanned and poorly protected, bait for the infantry assault that he must have known would come. Nothing would deflect the onward advance of their capital warships, all of which were now training forward weapon arrays on the numerically inferior Wolves. Gunn's battleships could compete with them for a while, but not forever. So much had been thrown into the first wave, counting on the enemy not wishing to surrender its vessels, and so compromising formation to save them. He felt the beginnings of a foul sickness in his stomach. Ragnarok ploughed onwards, right into the heart of the cataclysm, all lances thundering. His shipmasters were piloting with skill, rolling and angling the guns to maximum effect. All around him, local space bumped and spiralled with the corpses of burned-out hulls. But still, he saw that it would not be enough.
They knew I would launch the gunships.
Ahead of him, less than 100 kilometers out, the Alpha Legion's core group of line battleships was drawing up into lance range. None of them had made any attempt to shield the frigates in their line of fire, and from the power build-ups detected, it looked likely they were planning to fire straight through them. They were bound to hit some of their own, though they clearly calculated that many had already been boarded and crippled, thus limiting the loss to the whole fleet. It was a wretched philosophy of war. Gunn checked the chronometer. Less than an hour of Russ's impossible deadline remained. Unless something changed quickly, his assault had no chance of breaking through.
"Increase fleet attack speed,"
he thundered, knowing how close he had already pushed them.
"Order all vessels to concentrate fire on the vanguard formation."
It was not over yet. The two fleets were still grinding into one another like juggernauts, and a random warp core breach or sudden loss of nerve could still turn the tide. All around them, lit up by the flares and bursts of lasfire, the boiling heart of Alaxis pressed in, seething like the nine hearts of hell. The Alpha Legion advanced before it, as cold and calm as machines.
"Break them!"
Lord Gunn roared, his whole voice shaking with the wrath that burned up from his hearts, his gauntlets clenched tight.
"By the All-Father! By immortal Fenris, break them!"
The last of the defenders on Iota Malefilis were slaughtered. The control systems taken over, and the whole place had begun to stink of still hot blood. Godsmote strode over to one of the sensorium consoles and looked down the list of incoming signals.
"Feck!"
he swore, watching the pinpoints of light dance. Bjorn looked out at the bridge's cracked real-view portal and saw the ruddy void beyond scored with explosions. Local space was clogged with the arcs and crackles of energy release, ripping into gargantuan void craft with an eerie, deceptive silence. Even as he watched, the burning hulk of a strike cruiser bearing Alpha Legion markings tumbled across the visual field, its spine broken, savior pods shedding from its underbelly like spawn released into the ocean.
"Status,"
he demanded, moving over to Godsmote's position. Ironvald and Earth took up guard by the broken doorway, reloading their bolters.
"It is hell,"
said Godsmote, sounding impressed. Bjorn only needed to glance at the tactical scope to see that he was right. Lord Gunn's maneuver already had no chance of success. The Alpha Legion cordon across the gas tunnel held firm, bolstered by their willingness to let their outer flanks be ripped away. Bjorn suddenly saw why their seizure of Iota Malefilis had been so easy. The enemy had husbanded their strength, allowing the wolves to expend theirs on weaker outriders. Waves of boarding actions had taken out much of the protective aegis of smaller ships, but not enough to seriously expose the main formations of capital vessels. Rus Van Gum and Ragnarok had waded into the heart of the battle, their flanks blazing with broadsides, surrounded by the vast cordon of the Alaxis Bloodwell's lethal blooms. Harafnical stood further back, launching barrage after barrage of torpedoes, hammering a path towards the enemy's heart in a cascade of smouldering, broken ship spines. But it was all too slow, and all too blunt. The Alpha Legion held the advantage. They could afford to lose two ships for every one Space Wolf vessel, and they played the game well. Lord Gunn had driven the rout vanguard hard, knowing they needed to gouge a hole in the defensive wall and knock the supporting vessels out of position. He'd almost done it in one sector. Ragnarok had taken apart its nearest rival, a leviathan named the Theta, and was continuing to power up the very heart of the battlesphere with all cannons spitting. But several dozen Alpha Legion ships had the ident Theta. Everything was repeated, referenced, and double-signalled, which was another hateful mark of the 20th, and it made no difference to the tactical situation. The wolves had not established positional dominance, and were now at the mercy of greater ship concentrations. Beyond the darkening mass of this particular Theta, more battleships were already lumbering into position, supported by new wings of escorts. The wolves could not muster anything like that discipline, and with their warriors spread thin in disruptive operations, the shackles of the Alaxis tunnel edges prevented anything other than a frontal assault they were now ill-equipped to maintain.
"He will take us back,"
muttered Bjorn, seeing the inevitability of it.
"We will never get a better chance,"
said Godsmote. He was right. If they failed to break out now, all that remained was to be driven deeper in, where the void corridors would narrow further, restricting their options down to nothing. They would be hounded day after day, until death came for them in petty battles conducted at long range. A poor way to die. Bjorn strode over to the command throne, kicking aside the broken-necked corpse in the way. He summoned up trajectory readings for the frigate, overrode them, and punched in new orders.
"This isn't over yet,"
he growled, sweeping his helm lenses across the devastated bridge.
"Find a comm station. Prepare new allegiance codes for Ragnarok."
The Iota Malephilus swung around hard, angling towards the closest Alpha Legion vessel, a frigate bearing the mark Keter Rho. The ship was fully occupied, running up close to a wolves formation, led by the strike cruiser Runeblade, and its main lance was powering up for the strike. All around them a thousand other battles were playing out, studded amid a maelstrom of flaring cannon discharge. The weapon control console on Iota Malephilus was almost exactly the same as the one on Hellridder, bar the variant sigils. The irony of this war was its awful familiarity. They were fighting with the same weapons, in the same way, with the same commitment. The Keter Rho swam into the real view portal, still powering along the same trajectory towards its target, and Bjorn unlocked the codes he needed. Hundreds of meters below him, the broadside batteries slammed open, primed for firing.
"They have detected our course change," reported Godsmote.
"Too late,"
said Bjorn, activating the gunnery release. Iota Malephilus continued on its trajectory, flying clumsily now that the secondary guidance crews were all dead, and launched its full payload at the Keter Rho. The space around it sizzled with coruscation, as the guns all fired at once, hurling a storm of ship-killing shells across the narrowing gap between them. Keter Rho attempted evasive action at the last moment, but it was too close to escape. In a series of sharp impacts, its facing flank was peppered with cannon bursts, shattering the void shields and penetrating down to the hull plates below. Immediately, other Alpha Legion vessels started to home in on Iota Malephilus's position, now alive to the switch of allegiance.
"Come about for another pass,"
said Bjorn, watching the tactical display fill with enemy signals and wondering how long they'd last. Godsmote made the adjustments, just as the chronometer hit the two-hour mark. Almost instantly, the fallback order came over the fleet comm. Lord Gunn had had enough. Even he wouldn't see the fleet ripped apart to salvage his pride. All across the battlesphere, assault rams, boarding boats and gunships would already be streaking back to their hangars, covered by whatever escorts had survived the initial melee. The Keter Rho still lived, and was turning to bring its own weapons to bear. Six other enemy ships were hurrying up from the starboard Nadir, all zeroing in on the Iota Malephilus.
"What are your orders?"
asked Godsmote. Bjorn didn't need to look at the tactical displays to know what he needed to do. It made him sick to contemplate it, but there were no alternatives.
"Broadcast the new ident,"
he snarled, tasting again the pain of retreat.
"Then full burn. Back with the rest."
Gunn remained at the helm of Ragnarok, glaring grimly out across the bridge of the enormous battleship. Below him, ranked across the dozens of terraces radiating out from the command dais, hundreds of mortals and servitors struggled to enact the withdrawal command without getting the ship destroyed. Alpha Legion vessels streaked in from every direction, now at full velocity, aiming to pierce the outer defensive shell and get in among the more damaged warships.
"Maintain the perimeter,"
warned Gunn, flagging up a weakness in the sector held by Fenrisava.
"Get the gunships landed. Skitya, we need to pull those torpedoes out."
The entire Wolves fleet was contracting, pulling in on itself and swiveling into retreat trajectories. It was a dangerous time, risking exposing the battleship's flanks before they could power up to full speed again. Some captured vessels were responding to the command, but not enough to replace those lost in the fury of the counterassault. The claustrophobic dimensions of the gas tunnel hindered them further, since straying into its margins would be as catastrophic as a full lance battery strike. So everything was tight, constricted by the volume of incoming fire, as well as the collapsing dimensions of the battlesphere. Gunn glanced down at the full-range hololith, noting the positions of the battleships. The Hrafnical had remained in the centre of the formation, somehow eking out even more ranged support from its ravaged gun batteries. It was the linchpin, around which the rest of the fleet was turning. He stared at the flickering image before him, feeling a kind of hatred for it. The Primarch was aboard that ship, lurking in his chambers, lost in a surly indifference. He should have been here.